So again, I apologize a little bit for my free association. The reason I'm going off into benching is because benching is about Hoda'ah. Hoda'ah is Yehuda, etc. But I do want to continue because it is fairly fundamental stuff. So we talked about Birkas HaMazon and the fact that Birkas HaMazon had originally three brachos, and then a fourth bracha was added after the massacres in Beitar, and after 3 years, where the Harugei Beitar were nitnu l'kavura, and then Chazal were masakein the bracha of Hatov Ametiv, Hatov Shelo Hisrichu, we are grateful that the bodies did not decompose, v'hametiv, and God does good that nitnu l'kavura, we were able to bury the dead. So I want to share with you two observations of the Meshech Chochmah, and I hope that all of you know that the Meshech Chochmah is the same person who is the Or Sameach. Our yeshiva is named after a great, great gadol who died without any surviving children. He had one daughter who died in his lifetime. This is Rabbi Meir Simcha HaKohen of Dvinsk, and there is a picture of him in the office. And it's worthwhile to see. The Or Sameach was really one of the great, great, great Gedolim in a generation of many, many great Gedolim. Rav Yitzchayim, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chanan Wasserman. The Or Sameach was one of the greatest of the great. And the Or Sameach is the name of the sefer he wrote on the Rambam. And the Meshech Chochmah is the name of the sefer he wrote on Chumash. Right? So it's all one thing. But in the Meshech Chochmah, he makes two interesting observations about benching that is worthwhile to keep in mind. The first observation is that Birkas HaMazon, after you eat, at least if you eat bread and you're filled up, is a doraisa, that is a Torah commandment. The bracha you make before food is not a Torah commandment. The Torah does not require you to make a bracha before eating. A bracha rishona is only midrabanan. It is the bracha after food that is minat Torah. Now, conversely, let's talk about Torah learning. According to many Rishonim, such as the Ramban, there is a mitzvah min haTorah to make a bracha before you learn Torah. The brachas we recite over the Torah in the morning, not the text. The text is always rabbinic. But the idea that you have to bless Hashem before you learn Torah, that is, according to Ramban, one of the 613 mitzvos of the Torah. Now you may ask me, where does the Torah say you have to recite a blessing before you learn Torah? So according to Ramban, again, the Rambam doesn't agree, but according to Ramban, this is actually the 613th mitzvah in the Torah. This is the last mitzvah in the Torah. And it's based on a verse that we actually recite every day before Shemona Esrei, taken from Parshas Hazinu, the next to the last parsha in the Torah. Ki Shem Hashem Ekra, when I call upon the name of God, Moshe speaking to Bnei Yisrael, Havu Godel Leilokeinu, you shall give greatness to our God. So the way the Ramban interprets the pasuk, when I teach you Torah, which is the name of God, when I call upon the name of God, Havu Godel, you shall give greatness to God, homage to God, by reciting Birchas HaTorah. So according to Ramban, the obligation of making a bracha before you learn Torah in the morning that covers you the whole day, that is a doraisa. But there is no bracha that we recite after we finish learning. And the only bracha that we recite after we finish Torah is when you're called up for an aliyah. So there is an after bracha. But it's clear that the after bracha is only midrabanan. So the Meshech Chachma points out, because Kriyas HaTorah is only drabanan. I mean, Torah reading is not a doraisa. So the Meshech Chachma points out there's a certain inconsistency here, or a certain contradiction. When it comes to food, the Iker bracha is the bracha that you make after you eat. And the Torah really doesn't care about the bracha you make before you eat. When it comes to Torah learning, the Torah is very concerned that you make a bracha before you learn, but the Torah is not concerned with making a bracha after you learn. So why by food is the Iker the bracha after the food? And with Torah, the Iker is the bracha before the learning, on a Torah level. So the Meshech Chachma says a very, very beautiful idea. What is the yesod of making brachos generally? Brachos are gratitude builders. Brachos are designed to inculcate within our personalities the notion of gratitude and appreciation for the benevolence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That when you drink water, you eat an apple, you eat a banana, whatever it is, to know that Hashem was kind in giving this, and let me emphasize as well that, the great Rabbi Avigdor Miller, Zichrono Livracha, who taught Torah for many, many years. He taught Torah for almost 80 years. He lived quite a long life. So one of the themes that he emphasized all of his years was the idea of gratitude, Hakaras HaTov. And in one of his books, he actually wrote a meditation about what do you think about before you eat an apple or a banana. That color, texture, we talked about this yesterday, the idea of Hakaras HaTov. So a bracha is Hakaras HaTov. So here's what the Meshech Chachma says. When a person is hungry, needy, thirsty, they are naturally grateful to God because there is a need that's being filled. So it's as if it were, you don't need, this is as far as the Torah is concerned, you don't need a bracha to put you into a grateful personality because the need itself fills you with gratitude to Hashem. Right? You have a boiling hot day and you come in out of the heat into an air-conditioned house and you have a glass of cold water or whatever it would be. You say, thank God, Baruch Hashem. You don't have to have a bracha to be grateful. Now, apparently, later generations became spoiled. Apparently, the reason Chazal were misaken a bracha rishona is we stopped being grateful even for that. But insofar as the Torah was concerned, and that's why the Torah left it to the sages to enact these takanos, like brachos and the like. But insofar as the Torah is concerned, the bracha before food was superfluous because the person in need is suffused with gratitude and appreciation. But what happens after you eat, after you're finished? You no longer have that hunger, so you might think I should even be more grateful. But that's not the way the human personality works. When we have everything we want out of God, we then turn rebellious. This is what the Torah says, where the Jewish people will come to Eretz Yisrael and they will be successful in war and they will conquer cities and they will accumulate wealth. What will they say? Kochi v'yotzem yodi. It is my power, my strength, and the power of my hands. Asa li es kol achayel hazeh, that has given me all of this wealth. We become spoiled, we become complacent, we become rebellious. So therefore the Torah says, after you finish, after you think erroneously, you don't need Hashem anymore, remember where this came from. Remember that He is the source. Remember that He is the one that gave you all of this. And be appreciative. So when it comes to food, the need for a gratitude inculcator is bedafka after you finish, not before. Because when you're in hunger, you are naturally grateful to have that hunger satisfied. But as I say, because of Yiridas HaDoros, we eventually needed the bracha before the food as well. With Torah, he says it's the opposite. Listen to what he says. He says, before I learn, maybe I'm not so grateful for the Torah. I would rather stay in bed a little longer. I'd rather read the paper, go to town, go to a movie, watch some TV. Having to come for another day of Cheskes Habatim, another day of such hard stuff, I might feel, I really am not in the mood. So when do you need to realize the greatness and the sweetness of Torah? Before you start, get yourself in a mindset where you realize how wonderful it is. But after you learn, says the Meshech Chachma, once you taste the sweetness of Torah, you don't have to express gratitude. By definition, you're going to be grateful, because you'll see how wonderful it is. And that is why, for food, we need the bracha afterwards. For Torah, we need the bracha before. You don't need the bracha afterwards, because your gratitude is going to be there after you learn. Now, you might ask the question, well, what if I don't feel that way? Even after I learn, I try to do my job, but I don't necessarily feel excited, I don't feel passionate, I don't feel energized, I don't feel Baruch Hashem, it was such a wonderful gift. We don't always feel that way. So here, you need to know something about the way Judaism works generally. Often, halachos are based, even doraisas are based, not so much on what a person actually experiences subjectively, but on the way a person should be. In other words, the Torah is telling me that learning should make you excited, it should make you joyous, it should make you happy. And that is reflected by the fact that that's why you don't need to make a bracha afterwards. Now, the fact that I subjectively don't always have that feeling, that's something I work on. That is something I try to develop. That is something I try to achieve. In other words, the halacha is pitched to the ideal of what a human being should be. And that itself is very important. Even though I, as an individual human being, don't always reach that level. In fact, maybe I'm wandering onto thin ice here. In some ways, this underlies, to take a totally different context, but I'm going to make a similar mashal. This underlies the extreme halachos that we have regarding contact of men and women. You know, can't hold hands, can't be alone with a woman that you're not married to. We have to have a mechitza because you might be distracted. And people ask the question, you know, gee, are men, you know, animals? Like, you know, I hold a woman's hand, you know, I'm going to have intercourse, you know. Why do we have such strict laws? Are passions supposed to be that strong? And the short answer is, the Torah is basically saying, yeah, that the feelings of a husband and a wife should be very, very powerful. That's right. And if indeed, as a result of overstimulation and the pretzis and the decadence of society, our feelings have become jaded, and as a result, you know, we just take things for granted, that itself is a spiritual chisaron. Okay, in other words, you have to think about it. Now, there's the concept of the kesher between husband and wife being extraordinarily strong is in fact what the Torah considers to be desirable and proper, and anything that dilutes the intensity of those feelings is in itself not a good thing. Okay. So this is the Meshech Chachmas Ha'ara, the difference between food and Torah. With food, after I finish my meal, I forget God, so I need to make a bracha. With Torah, after I finish my Torah learning, I feel much more connected to God. Therefore, I don't need the bracha, because the Torah itself puts me in the place that I'm supposed to be. Okay, that's one ha'ara of the Meshech Chachma. The other ha'ara of the Meshech Chachma is that he points out that if you look at the four blessings of Birchas HaMazon, you actually see an ascending level of gratitude, starting from the most obvious to the biggest chiddush, meaning you're growing in your gratitude as you're going through the benching. Let's take, in other words, this is what's called lo zu af zu, what you're learning more, not only this, but be grateful even for this. And not only for this, but even for this. And not only for this, but even for this. Let's see how this is so. The first bracha, which is called Birchas Hazan, was authored by Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu did Birchas Hazan. What was the occasion that inspired him to write this particular blessing? The falling of the man in the desert every single day except for Shabbos. Now the man is the most obvious situation of being grateful to God, because the man is supernatural. The man is miraculous. You have nothing to do with the man. The man absolutely comes from Hashem. So of course, I'm going to be grateful to Hashem because there is no other source and no other explanation. So man, we would explain, is the most obvious instance of gratitude to God because there's no way you can credit yourself. And man was supernatural in so many ways. It was supernatural that it fell every day from the heaven. By the way, the Mefarshim say that the bracha on the man was Hamotzi Lecha Min HaShemayim. God brings the bread from the heaven. Also, the man had an amazing quality, according to the Gemara, that man could taste like whatever you wanted it to taste like. You wanted ice cream, you wanted steak, whatever. I don't know what people's tastes were in those days, although we know they liked meat and the like. Quail. In fact, it's an interesting question. Why did they need the quail if they had the man? The answer is they wanted to see the food, not just taste it. There was another thing about the man. The man was a daily report card of how you were in the eyes of the Almighty. An amazing thing. If you were righteous, your man was right near your home, your tent. If you were not righteous, you had to look around and forage for your man, and you couldn't find it right away, although it was there for you, but you had to look. Now you might ask an obvious question. Okay, so let's say I'm next to a righteous guy, so I'll just take his man. The answer is you didn't see it. This is the most amazing thing. The man could have been 2 feet away from me. But if I wasn't righteous and that wasn't my portion, I did not even see it. And I'm looking around. Where's the man? Where's the man? And I see everybody picking up the man, but nothing's in their hands. They're picking up like this invisible thing. And I'm looking for it, and I can't find it. Till I travel a mile, 2 miles, whatever it was, and then I see my man. Oh, now I can take it and the like. So it was a daily report card. You were righteous, it was right there. You weren't righteous, you're walking around for an hour, 2 hours, till you find it. And of course the miracle that the man did not last, it could not be kept overnight, because every day Hashem wanted us to realize that He is the source of our parnasa. But then they had the double portion on Shabbos. So everything about the man is miraculous, supernatural. Now, the greatest miracle is the most obvious Hakara Satov, because it's Pashit. Now, bracha number 2 is the bracha about Eretz Yisrael. And the author of bracha number 2 was Yoshua ben Nun, when we entered the land of Israel. Now, there already, it's a little ambiguous, because once we enter Eretz Yisrael, there's a lot of stuff we have to do. We have to plant. There's no man. We have to plant and harvest. We have to build cities. We have armies. We have to fight enemies. At that point, gratitude to Hashem is less obvious, because a person might say, as the Torah says, Kochi v'yotzim yadi, it's my power, my might, my ability. So, you're building. Not only be grateful to God for what is obvious and 100% from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but even those activities in which you have to invest a great deal of effort and suffering and toil, recognize that too is only because Hashem blessed you, and without the blessing of God, none of your endeavors would have any success. Right? That's the second level. Now, the third level is the blessing that asks Hashem's mercy on the destroyed Beis HaMikdash and the rebuilding of Yerushalayim and the Malchus Beis David, which is the coming of Mashiach. Now, this is a much higher level, because this is a bracha that is covering the suffering of the Jewish people in Golos, in which Hashem allowed the temple to be destroyed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu exiled us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us away. And in that Golos, we've had so much suffering and persecution. So what is that third blessing saying? That not only am I grateful to God when we have our land and we have our Beis HaMikdash and we have our Mashiach, but even when we're bereft of everything and we're in Golos, we still understand the Chasdei Hashem that give us life and give us the ability to persevere. Right? So that's a third level. Not only am I grateful for the Mun, and not only am I grateful for Eretz Yisrael, but I'm even grateful to Hashem during the years and the persecutions of the Golos, which were so difficult and so bitter. And then we come to the fourth blessing. The fourth blessing is not only Golos and Chorban. The fourth blessing is Holocaust and calamity. The fourth blessing, those hundreds of thousands, if not millions of corpses. Now, if you've seen, some say you shouldn't look at the pictures. It's very interesting. I don't know if you've been to Yad Vashem or you've seen pictures in encyclopedias or whatever. The corpses of the Nazis, before they would, sometimes they ran out of space in the gas chambers. And they literally had bodies they had to pile up, or after the gas chambers. Before they could burn the bodies, right? The incinerators were overworked. And you see pictures of bodies piled up. Again, there are people that say, again, I'm not giving you a psak, they actually say, when you go to a museum like Yad Vashem, or in the United States, you go to the Holocaust Museum, and they have pictures of Jews, men and women, who might be naked, or whatever it is. There are those that say, people of sensitivity say not to look at the pictures. You're invading the privacy and the dignity and the kavod of people who not only were killed brutally but also humiliated and shamed before their death. It's an interesting sensitivity that a sensitive person would not even want to stare, so to speak, even at a picture. But imagine Beitar, in which you had these corpses piled up, although they did not decompose. So what is the fourth bracha? The fourth bracha is the deepest and highest and most difficult level of Hakaras HaTov that you could even imagine. That even in a calamity of Holocaust proportions, if not more, we see the blessing of Hashem in letting us bury the dead and in the bodies not spoiling. So you're going up in levels from the Mun, which is a 100% divine kindness, to the Harugei Beitar, which is seeing the goodness of God even in devastating calamity. Right? So what you're learning is, you're learning gratitude in all stages of life. And that's what happens. Now, from the Mun, we then extrapolate to everything that happens in our existence. Now, as I indicated yesterday, and as you know anyway, Hatova HaMeitiv comes in a long form and a short form. Right, the long form is in benching, and the short form is when good tidings happen, like you have a son, or when you share wine together and you're upgrading the wine from a lower quality wine to a higher quality wine. So although you don't have to make Borei Pri HaGafen, but you do have to make a bracha of Hatova HaMeitiv. It's interesting, Rav Yonah Sinepshitz, the Urim V'Tumim, the great Rav of Prague, discusses, why would we be misaken something about Beitar when we're enjoying wine? What exactly is the connection? When I'm drinking wine, I got to remember the massacres of Beitar. So Rav Yonah Sinepshitz says a very, very interesting thought. He says that, you know, Beitar, the Bar Kokhba revolt, was crushed 65 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 70, and Beitar was destroyed in 135 of the secular calendar. That's 65 years later. Although the Gemara says 52 years. It's a bit of a Tzorachian. But 50, 60 years after the event. Now, the destruction of Beitar was much, much worse than even the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in terms of Jews that were murdered. And the Gemara asks, why did Beitar have such a devastating destruction? And the reason the Gemara in Gittin gives is because they did not mourn the destruction of Jerusalem. They figured, okay, what happened in Jerusalem is what happened to Jerusalem. They got destroyed. Our community is fine. We're strong. We're secure. We're able to fight off the enemies. And because they did not care or empathize with the sufferings of other Jews, this awful calamity befell them. This is a continuation of the sinas chinam, of the hatred, or the polarization, or the indifference that precipitated the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash to begin with. That continued now. So Rav Yonah Napshit said, when does a person upgrade from cheap wine to champagne? Generally speaking, you're not going to do it when you're sitting by yourself. When you're sitting by yourself, you'll drink the cheap stuff. You're not going to bring out the Dom Perignon, you know, when you're sitting by yourself. Generally, it's when you're sitting with your group, your clique, your buddies, your friends. And then you have all the fancy stuff. Now, that is when there might be a certain type of elitism, a certain type of cliquishness. I'm with my inner circle. And when you're toasting and you're within your inner circle, you may look at other people as outsiders, as less significant, not really part of the in-group. So precisely at that moment, Chazal say, remember Beitar. Beitar was destroyed because of their coldness, because of their indifference, because they created an insider-outsider, an us versus them, with your own fellow Jews. And therefore, precisely at the moment when you're closest with your in-group, you think about the Jews who are not part of your in-group, and maybe expand your group to bring them in as well. This is what Rav Yonah Napshit says, is why we think about Beitar precisely when we're drinking our fancy wine. Now, you have to know, if you learn Maseches Brachos especially, you know that the structure of the liturgy is absolutely exact in so many ways, so many technicalities. Let me give you an example of this. Birkas HaMazon is a very, very good text to study for all of these diyukim. You know, there are certain rules that Chazal gave us for how brachos are composed. Rule number one is every single bracha must not only mention the name of Hashem, but it must also mention that Hashem is Melech Ha'olam. Melech Ha'olam. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam. This is called Shem Umalchus. If you make a bracha without Malchus, even if I said Hashem's name, if I said Baruch Atah Hashem Shakol Ni'ah B'dvaro, and I said Hashem's name, I am not Yotzei the bracha. I have to say the whole bracha again, because if I don't mention Malchus, it's not a bracha. So every bracha must have Shem Umalchus. Now, one big question you might ask, which I'm not going to fully address, I can think of a real biggie that doesn't have Malchus. Let's take Shemona Esrei. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu V'Elokei Avoseinu. Close, but no cigars, they say. Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchak, etc., etc., etc. There is no mention of Melech Ha'olam. Okay? But let's take Birchas Kriyashma. In Birchas Kriyashma, we do begin Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. You have Malchus in the first one at least. Okay? Not in Shemoneh Esrei, but in the first bracha of the Shema. Okay, so rule number one is a bracha must have malchus, or it's not a bracha. We will leave the question of Shmona Esrei for a moment. Now, there's a rule number two, which has many, many, many exceptions that have to be explained, and that is, there's a difference between what is called a long bracha and what is called a short bracha. A short bracha is a single phrase, like the bracha that you make on food. A long bracha is a longer paragraph. Now, when you have a longer paragraph, Chazal say it must begin with Baruch and end with a Baruch. Again, so you say, now, the second Baruch doesn't have to have Malchus, though. In other words, so let's take the first paragraph of benching as an excellent example, and the first paragraph of Shmona Esrei, except for the Malchus. The first paragraph of benching is a perfect example of a long bracha. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Hazan Es HaOlam, and it ends Baruch atah Hashem Hazan Es HaKol. It's Poseach BeBaruch, and it is Chosen BeBaruch. Right, that is how a bracha arucha works, and a bracha arucha does not have to mention Malchus in the chasima. The chasima is the ending, because it mentioned Malchus in the psicha. Shmona Esrei also begins Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu, and it ends Baruch Atah Hashem Magen Avraham. The only, so it's Poseach BeBaruch V'Chosein BeBaruch. The only problem with Shmona Esrei is you don't have Malchus. So I'll give you one answer that the Mefarshim say, that since it mentions Elokei Avraham, Avraham, and Avraham was the one who taught the world that Hashem is the king, so mentioning Avraham is equivalent to mentioning Melech HaOlam. In other words, it's a substitute alternative. Okay. So the two rules of brachos we need to know is that you have to have Malchus in a bracha, and you have to be, if it's a longer bracha, you have to begin with Baruch and end with Baruch. Now, we now have an exception to that second rule. Because think about Shmona Esrei as a very good example. Shmona Esrei is 19 blessings. How many blessings begin with Baruch and end with Baruch? Only one. Every other blessing begins Atah Gibor, Atah Kadosh, Atah Chonen, Salach Lanu. It ends with Baruch, but it does not begin with Baruch. So how do we get around that? Isn't there a rule that if it's more than one sentence, you got to begin with Baruch and end with Baruch? So here's a very important exception, and that is something called Bracha Smucha Lechaverta. If you have bracha number one begins with Baruch and ends with Baruch, and then you recite a bunch of other brachos adjacent to that bracha, it's as if the ending of that bracha covers a Baruch Atah Hashem to be the beginning of the next bracha, and it becomes an eternal chain that way. So let's take Shmona Esrei. The first bracha of Shmona Esrei begins with Baruch and ends with Baruch. The second bracha, I can use the ending of bracha 1 to be the beginning of bracha 2. I can use the ending of bracha 2, L'chaye HaMesim, to be the beginning of bracha 3. I can use the end of bracha 18 to be the beginning of bracha 19. This is called bracha semucha l'chaverta. And this works even if they're not directly connected. Let's take Psukei DeZimra as an example. Psukei DeZimra has a bracha that we recite before Psukei DeZimra and a bracha that we recite after Psukei DeZimra. The bracha that we recite before Psukei DeZimra is Baruch Sha'amar. Now, Baruch Sha'amar does work. The beginning of Baruch Sha'amar is not the bracha yet, but in the middle, the bracha begins. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Hakel, etc. And then it says, Baruch Atah Hashem Melech Mehulal Batish Bechos. So that bracha is your perfect bracha. Begins with Baruch, not the Baruch Sha'amar, but the Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu. It has Malchus, And it ends, Baruch Ata Hashem, Melech Mehulal Batish Bechos. Yeah? Then you say the Tehillim of Psukei Dezimra. But the after bracha of Psukei Dezimra is Yishtabach, which ends, Baruch Ata Hashem, Kael Melech Gadol Batish Bechos, etc. But it doesn't begin with Baruch. But the answer is, since Yishtabach is always paired with Baruch Sha'amar, it's never said separately. It is treated as adjacent to the end of Baruch Sha'amar that you don't have to begin with Baruch Ata Hashem. That's called a bracha samucha lechaverta. So samucha does not mean it immediately follows, but it means it is always paired. Now, Hallel is the same thing. Now, Hallel begins with a short bracha, that's true, but in principle it's the same. Hallel begins with a short bracha, so it doesn't have two barachs. Bracha d'Hashem Gein Mechulam, Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvotav Zion B'Kavos HaHallel. But the after bracha of Hallel is a paragraph, Yahalelucha Hashem Elokeinu. And it ends, Bracha Hashem Melech Mehulal Batish Bechot. But shouldn't I begin with a baruch, since it's a long bracha? Answer, since you never say the Yahalelucha paragraph, unless you also have that bracha before, it's bracha smucha l'chaverta. Right? You see the idea? Now, this is exactly how benching works. Okay? Because the first bracha of benching is your classic bracha arucha. Begins with baruch, elokeinu melechem, and it ends with hazanes hakol. The next bracha noda ends with baruch, but it doesn't begin with baruch. Answer, it's adjacent to hazanes hakol. The Al HaKol is adjacent to Noda, so the end of Noda, I'm sorry, not Al HaKol, Rachem is adjacent to Noda, so the end of that, right? And B'nai Yerushalayim, the same thing. So the question you might ask is this. So how come, when I come to the fourth blessing of HaTova HaNetiv, I actually begin a new Bracha Arucha? Right? I say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokei Melechem Hakel Avinu Malkeinu. Yeah? Based on this, I should just continue the parallelism of Bracha Smucha Lechaverta. The answer is this. The answer is that since Hatov V'Hametiv is sometimes said, at least the initial, independently of benching, such as changing wine, it is not invariably linked to the other blessings. So if something sometimes has an autonomous existence, you don't apply the rule of bracha smucha lechaverta, and it must begin with baruch. Of course, the other question you could ask, for which this is not an answer, is, okay, that's why it begins with baruch. But why doesn't it end with Baruch? Why isn't there another Baruch Ata Hashem at the end, since the rules of brachos are beginning and end? Okay? So this is the tricky rule of Bracha Smucha L'Chaverta. Once you know this rule, pay attention to the sitter. Look around at the sitter. Always ask yourself a question. Why doesn't a Bracha begin with Baruch Ata Hashem? And see if you figure this out. Kriya Shema of the morning is the same pattern. The first Bracha, which is a long bracha, the printing of the siddur might confuse you, but the first bracha of Shema begins with Baruch Ata Hashem Elokei Melech Olam Yotzer Or Vari Choshech, and it goes all the way, that's the Kedusha, it goes all the way till Baruch Ata Hashem Yotzer HaMeyoros. Begins with Baruch and Malchus, and ends with Baruch Ata Hashem Yotzer HaMeyoros. Begins and ends. But the next bracha is Ava Rabba or Avas Olam. Mariv is the same thing. And it does not begin with the Baruch, but the answer is because you only say it with the other bracha, so it's Samucha L'Chaverta. And the bracha after Shema is Ras Avoseinu, or MS V'Yatsiv, also is Samucha L'Chaverta. So they end with the Baruch, they don't begin with the Baruch, right? That's how it works with Birchas Kriya Shema. That's how it works for Shemona Esrei. That's how it works for Hallel. That's how it works for Birchas Hamazon, except for Atova Metiv, which has independent existence. That's how it works for Sheva Brachos, except for the last one, which again is sometimes recited independently, And that's why it's not smucha l'charta. Yeah.
So when you say tefillas haderech, basically you should say it after, like al nechya,
yeah,
so that it has that connection.
Right.
So why was that not composed at the starting bracha?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Meaning, why wasn't tefillas haderech mesukan with a Baruch Ata Hashem and the like? I don't know. I'm going to think about that. I remember it is a question that Achronim asked, but I have to go back and then check the Teretz for it. Okay? So these are some things you need to know about the structure of the Siddur. Remember the klal. Something is smucha l'chavrita only if you always say it with the other blessing. But if sometimes you say it separately, even though you're saying it with the other blessing, it's an autonomous blessing, and it has to begin with Baruch and end with Baruch. Okay? Okay, well, we'll see if